This pothole's a big one.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. General Motors, with its low cash on hand and borrowed federal money, says it's cutting 10,000 jobs, a third of those here in the United States. And for the rest of its white-collar workers, it's cutting pay. A need to restructure and lousy new car sales are to blame. All the cuts will take place in the next few months. We're going to hear this morning from Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. He's set to lay out another federal plan for the banks. This time, it's the Obama administration that will be doling out funds from the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP. A preview of that announcement now from Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
The centerpiece of the plan is likely to be a public-private partnership to get the bad assets away from the banks. Guarantees from the government would make the assets attractive to hedge funds and private equity firms. There's also expected to be a major expansion of the Fed's program to unfreeze credit markets. And banks Washington deems healthy enough will get further capital injections. Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics says he's encouraged by the plan, but
what's missing here is finality. You may still have insolvent banks once you've bought a lot of bad assets from them, and you will have to put more capital in.
Cornelius Hurley directs the Morin Center on Banking at Boston University. He says the most important thing today is for people to walk away from Secretary Geithner's speech thinking adults are in charge and know what they're doing.
If you don't have an articulated plan, a well-articulated plan, then you're never going to get to that confidence issue.
We'll find out how articulated the plan is when Secretary Geithner articulates it in about an hour. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Wall Street's eagerly waiting for what Mr. Geithner has to say. Market's pretty much mixed right now. The Dow is down by a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ's up by a quarter of a percent. S&P 500 down just a tad. Asian markets closed mixed today. European markets are down at this hour about a percent. Quest Communications says its profits in the fourth quarter fell by nearly half. Swiss bank UBS lost $7.5 billion last quarter. A lot of write-downs, a lot of big money being pulled, and the losses will cost jobs, 2,000 of them. President Obama's stimulus package is back in the Senate, awaiting more debate and a formal vote. Among the groups sweating out the details are states. They're hoping to get their share of some much-needed cash. From North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
The House bill sets aside some federal money that states could use however they want. Another slice of it would be designated for education. But the Senate's version would reduce funds for states by $40 billion. Higher education budgets would likely be the first line item cut. Washington Governor Chris Gregoire says that's where states need the most help.
We have got to come out of this recession ready to go with the skilled workforce. So I hope it will in conference be replenished.
Unlike the federal government, 49 of the 50 states have balanced budget requirements. Michael Byrd with the National Conference of State Legislatures says that means they usually can't write checks during a recession.
We lay people off. We delay projects. We slice programs. We do all the things that are against economic recovery.
That's why states are watching this stimulus debate so closely. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
There's a sweeping new law that goes into effect today, one that supposedly protects children from lead and plastic softening chemicals called phthalates. Congress passed it after last year's massive recalls of Chinese-made toys. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Okay, I just went out and bought this rubber ducky. Plastic, actually. Made in China. It's soft, squeaky. And as of today, it can't have more than 0.1% phthalates or 600 parts per million of lead. That would be against the law and could lead to big fines. But under pressure from business groups, the Consumer Product Safety Commission delayed the costly requirement that products be tested and certified for one more year. Scott Wolfson of the Consumer Product Safety Commission says in time, it will become easier to find out what's in your kid's rubber ducky or talking Elmo.
Labeling to help parents will be coming. But parents, starting today, should have increased confidence that a new law is in place to protect their children.
Wolfson points out that many big manufacturers and store chains were already meeting the new standards months ago. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, February 10th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. Four top British bankers have been hauled before a parliamentary committee this morning for a public roasting. The banks are the two biggest casualties of the financial crisis in the UK, Royal Bank of Scotland and HBOS. Stephen Beard has more from London.
One of the bankers was white-faced and spoke with a quivering voice. The other three squirmed in their seats. The men were questioned about their role in the financial crisis. The banks they ran lost billions and are now propped up by the state. The committee will report on the lessons to be learned, but, says economist Andrew Hilton, the real purpose is ritual humiliation.
There is something to be said for the theatrical aspect of all of this. It isn't a bad thing to personalise the crisis and to get the guys who were at the top of these institutions. It's equivalent to putting them in the stocks and throwing eggs at them.
At least the four men were treated more gently than their forebears. During a major financial crisis in the 18th century, Parliament resolved that bankers should be tied up in sacks full of snakes and thrown into the Thames. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today, Congress looks at a renewable energy proposal. It would require utilities to tap more into alternative sources such as wind and solar. At least half the states have some mandates already in place, but creating a single national policy could be pretty tough. Here's Marketplace's Sam Eaton.
The proposed standard would require utilities to generate 20% of their power from renewable sources within 12 years. It covers everything from biomass to geothermal to wind and solar. Nathaniel Green with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the U.S. has an abundance of renewable energy. It just needs the right incentives to tap it.
This sort of a federal policy will get us out there, get us developing these projects, get this resource into the marketplace. And it's the only way really to make sure we really get it into the marketplace quickly.
But at what cost? David Wright heads the Southeastern Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners.
All states and certainly all regions are not the same.
Wright says coal-dependent southeastern states don't have sufficient wind and solar resources to meet the mandates. That means either paying fines or buying renewable energy credits from other states. Either way, he says ratepayers will bear the costs. Environmentalists disagree. They say the Southeast has ample biomass resources to meet the mandate. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The New York subway system gets millions of people to and from work every day. It also presents its captive audience with plenty of ads while they're on the train. Typical ads include ones for learning English, bad skin remedies, and the services of a personal injury lawyer. So imagine Ashley Milne-Tite's surprise when she saw an ad trying to recruit Franciscan friars from among the traveling public.
It's not often on the subway that your eyes come to rest on a bunch of men in habits, but I'm on the N train crossing the Manhattan Bridge, and I'm looking at a group of smiling friars. The tagline to the ad reads, day shift, night shift, how about a life shift? I asked Father Brian Smale about the ads. He's vocation director for Holy Name Province, the group of Franciscans that mounted the campaign.
We've always had to advertise for vocations. You know, we've never had like a multitude of people knocking at the door. But let's face it, today it's more difficult to attract vocations because people have so many choices now.
In 1979, Holy Name Province had 830 members. Today it has fewer than 400. Father Brian says it was time for a new tactic.
I think these days to reach people, you have to be creative and you have to go where people are. Think of the numbers of people that travel the subway every day.
Including the Franciscans' target audience, unmarried men in their 20s and 30s. Father Brian says he's had a lot of calls from prospects, including a teacher, a TV producer and an accountant. He says the campaign, which includes some YouTube videos, was planned long before the economy soured. But Mara Einstein, author of the book Brands of Faith, says the timing couldn't be better.
Given sort of the self-reflection that's going on in our culture right now, and people are reassessing their values and what they think about in terms of how they want to spend their life, this is actually a wonderful opportunity for this.
She says the enormity of that life shift is tough to convey in a print ad. Friars take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Everyone lives together. And Father Brian says they carry on the work St. Francis started in 1223 of ministering to the dispossessed.
So embracing someone that doesn't measure up, quote unquote, in terms of what society believes, whether it's somebody that's poor, somebody with AIDS.
It's very different from his previous life as a systems analyst at Bank of America. He says so far he hasn't come across any former bankers interested in such a radical change in their lives. But if there are any out there, he'd be glad to hear from them. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Yeah, and this economic fallout, it seems like everyone's consumed with whether they'll keep their jobs or their homes. Maybe they're thinking about retirement or the kids' college education. There's a school in London that's cashing in by asking the really big questions. Our story now from Christopher Worth.
Would you like to come and sit down?
At the new School of Life in London, Anne Braben's course on work is completely full.
Gather together. I think there'll be two groups of six, the rest of fives.
The course is meant to help people who still have jobs get more out of their working lives by exploring the meaning of, well, life.
What we're concerned with here at the School of Life is the most enduring question of all, how should I live?
That's Sophie Howarth, the school's director. She opened her doors last fall. Her courses are fully booked through the spring. The work course runs over a weekend and costs about $300. The School of Life also offers classes on everything from love to politics and other meaningful topics. Will Brimmer is a bartender. He traveled 300 miles to be here.
It is a long way to come. It's quite interesting to spend a weekend looking at what drives you and where you see yourself going.
Class members write out their main career goals, like newspaper headlines, and then they're posted around the classroom.
My headline is, I'd like to know what I want to achieve.
Just because people are grateful to still be employed, the larger questions don't necessarily go away. Alice Driscoll isn't planning on leaving her advertising career anytime soon, but...
There is something in the back of my head, and I've got this feeling that I know I want to experience something else.
If that something else is philosophy or beekeeping, she's in the right place. The School of Life can even rent you experts in a number of professions by the hour.
So if you're ready to see the beekeeper, he'll show you the bees. If you're ready to meet the philosopher, it's more likely to be sitting in a cafe over a cup of coffee.
At the end of the day, everyone piles into taxis and heads off to dinner at a small furniture-making factory on the other side of town.
We use the whole city like a guerrilla campus to kind of explore the work that other people are doing.
And lucky enough for Howarth, pondering life's big questions is proving to be recession-proof. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Finally, even in these tough economic times, you can still meet someone at the Met. But it's a sad note being played behind the scenes. The Metropolitan Opera's warned that unless quick action is taken, it could face a disaster. Four productions have been sidelined, and the Met's endowment of $300 million has dropped by nearly a third. Staffers there face pay cuts of 10%. But as they say, the show goes on, and tonight's performance in New York features star tenor Placido Domingo. More on our website at marketplace.org. The numbers there, of course, the Dow now down about 0.5%. You can find out more at marketplace.org and meet our new online host, Scott J. Gow. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.